Welcome to another episode of Conversations on Transformation, our series of interviews from the STEG Annual Conference 2024. My name is Tim Phillips, and I'm at NYU Abu Dhabi to talk to the experts who understand the challenges and opportunities of structural transformation and economic growth. The recent focus on vaccination in sub-Saharan Africa has had extraordinary benefits for the children and adults whose lives it has saved. But does it have equivalent economic benefits too? This is a question that's going to be increasingly relevant to policymakers as diseases like malaria are finally brought under control by a new wave of vaccines. Minky Kim of the University of Mannheim has some exciting and encouraging new research that challenges the accepted wisdom on the economic impact of eliminating malaria. When I met him, I started by asking him about the persistent legacy of death and disease that malaria causes.
Malaria has been here forever, and it's still a major killer of children in sub-Saharan Africa. In every year, more than 400,000 kids die from malaria,
wow.
And most of them are children under age 5.
Wow.
So not only it kills children, it's also a big barrier to human capital accumulation, because surviving children also are known to suffer from worse learning outcome in school due to long-lasting cognitive damages or weakened physical health.
There's been a search for a vaccine. A lot of effort's been put into this. Are we getting close to having an effective malaria vaccine?
So malaria is a tricky one because, unlike other diseases that has eventually succumbed to mankind, malaria, there was no vaccine until very recently. But in 2021, scientists finally have found a new first ever malaria vaccine,
wow.
Which is proven to be successful in clinical trials and also proven to provide up to 80% protection against infection. So we're very excited about that. And the World Health Organization are currently planning to supply these vaccines to selected sub-Saharan African country through national immunization programs.
And this seems like excellent news for humanity, but excellent economic news as well. But I note that not all economists are convinced that this is going to raise living standards. Why don't they believe this?
There are existing studies that study the macroeconomic effects of malaria eradication. For example, there's Acemoglu and Johnson 2007 paper. I mean, this paper is not exactly about malaria. They look at the general improvement of health in life expectancy increase. And there's another paper by Ashraf, Lester, and Weil. This paper specifically studied malaria, but both papers share the same logic. They suggested this eradicating disease would mainly just increase the population because there are going to be fewer deaths, but not raise the GDP per capita by much. If life expectancy grows and there are more people in the economy, but the GDP growth is not catching up with the population growth, then it will result into lower per capita GDP.
I see a sort of Malthusian argument.
Yeah.
You come to different conclusions. What's the difference between the analysis that you've done and this previous work? Where's your evidence to reassess this?
I built the first model where I allow parents to optimally decide how many number of children to have and also whether they want to give their children education based on the disease environment they face, which is malaria in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And this model provides a way to study both fertility and human capital, how they endogenously respond to changing disease environment. But as you mentioned that in order to have a realistic prediction from the model, the magnitude of the fertility and the education response should be realistic or grounded by the empirical findings. And that's where I used this large-scale anti-malaria campaign, which happened in early 2000 in multiple sub-Saharan African countries. So let me talk a little bit about this campaign because it's really important in this context.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rollback malaria campaign. It was a large-scale initiative launched by multiple international organizations, and it started from 2003, and the campaign aggressively distributed preventive technology against malaria, such as bed nets or indoor sprays to kill mosquitoes, which is the transmitter of malaria. And the key mechanism I have in the model is to quantify how fertility and children's human capital change when there is a lower risk of malaria, since these individual responses is going to determine how population and GDP per capita at the aggregate level will change in response to eradicating malaria. So estimating these moments requires an exogenous change in the risk of malaria, and this rollback malaria campaign provides an ideal setting.
Uh-huh.
I estimate the effects of reduced risk of malaria on children's education attainment and women's fertility through a difference in differences design, and I find that when the risk of malaria was reduced, first, children attained 0.6 additional years of schooling, and second, women lowered their fertility by about 6%. And I bring this empirical estimate to the model and discipline the model's parameter through some simulated method of moment, and then with the estimated model, I can simulate the long-run effects of this vaccination program with this promise efficacy of the vaccine developed last year.
You're also taking a different attitude to human capital accumulation, aren't you? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
The key difference is that the previous study only focused on how many more years of schooling children obtain to quantify the positive effects of removing malaria. But an implicit assumption behind this is that one additional year of schooling gives you the same amount of human capital before and after malaria removal. Mm-hmm. But the increase in schooling itself is the evidence that the return to education is also higher. Healthier children gain more from the same years of schooling, and increase in years of schooling is what we actually observe as a result of the higher return. So we have to account for this, and in order to do that, the model has not only whether someone complete the primary or secondary education, but also how much amount of actual human capital one acquires within the school with and without malaria.
So within this model, what factors are influenced by the risk of catching malaria, which is what's going to change?
In the model, malaria, or the disease shock in general, has two dimensions. First one is the mortality dimension. Yep. Disease kills children, so it's straightforward. So not everyone can make it to age 6 in the model because malaria mostly attacks children under age 5. Mm-hmm. The other dimension, which I call morbidity, represents the detrimental effects of disease on children's human capital accumulation.
Right.
So when you're sick, then the same child cannot obtain the same amount of human capital by going to school compared to healthy children who didn't get malaria.
What comes out of the model? First of all, the economic effects, the short and the long run economic effects of the reduction in malaria risk in your model, which we are all keenly looking forward to.
I simulate the effects of nationwide malaria vaccination program, taking the Tanzanian economy in 2001 as a reference point.
Okay.
The long run increase in GDP per capita is around 30%, much, much larger than previously estimated. Even in the short run, if you look at the cohorts of children who just born after vaccination program, they're now expected to have around 18% higher income as well. This is already a much larger effect than previously estimated, even in the short run.
This is a huge effect. It really is very large indeed, isn't it?
It is.
And you're looking at education as well. Is there a separate education attainment increase as well?
Part of this gain is coming from the increase in education attainment at the extensive margin.
Yeah.
So in the long run, when we implement this vaccination program, both primary and the secondary education completion rate jumps up. I mean, it's more pronounced in the primary school education completion rate because malaria is like happens really at the early stage of life. But both primary and secondary education and the general level of human capital in a nation increases a lot. What's more important is that 1 year in school is not the same as before when kids are now free from malaria.
These quite subtle, quite nuanced changes that you've made to the model have made an enormous difference in the result, haven't they? What's driving this difference?
The first thing is the quality of human capital that I alluded to earlier. The model says that even without any increase in years of schooling, like suppose that there's no change in years of schooling after the vaccination program, but still income for the children who received the vaccination would increase almost by 10%. The implication here is that years of schooling only captures only one-third of the increase in human capital, and using years of schooling as a main measure of human capital can significantly underestimate the benefits of disease eradication. Mm-hmm. And this is the distinguishing factor from the previous study, which used the years of schooling as a main measure of human capital.
Eliminating malaria has always been a public health goal, one of the biggest public health goals, because it's a good thing in itself. but it strikes me that this makes it an extremely effective economic policy goal as well.
Obviously, the vaccine is going to save a lot of lives. There's no question in that.
Yeah.
But we as economists ask this question whether this is also economically beneficial policy.
Uh-huh.
In the paper, I run some cost and benefit analysis, and this vaccine requires 3 shots. It's like a COVID vaccine. There's 1 shot initially and 2 booster shots.
Mm-hmm.
And each shot requires about $7 for production. And then there's a transportation cost and there's an administration cost. But everything combined, the cost of vaccination per child never exceeds about $50,
uh-huh.
which is less than 10% of GDP. If you compare that number to the number I mentioned earlier, 18% of increase in income in the short run and the 30% increase in the long run, then it's obvious that this vaccination policy is a massively profitable policy. I agree that there are lots of other development objectives that requires money, but malaria vaccination program is really a bang for the buck. So it could be a top priority growth policy for developing countries in sub-Saharan Africa.
Given that, this really does create a need to invest in vaccine supply and distribution. Because one thing that we learned during the COVID pandemic is it's one thing to create a vaccine, and in development context, it's quite another to make sure that the people who need it get it. So I guess this does create follow-on need for that kind of investment, or to make that more of a priority.
Yes, I totally agree. We've seen in the COVID case that Sub-Saharan Africa was the last continent that received the vaccine, even though the vaccine production was like more than enough to cover the entire population. What's different between malaria and COVID is that it was the elderly people who were more vulnerable to COVID. The malaria is most detrimental to children.
Mm-hmm.
And childhood is important for human capital accumulation. Malaria compared to COVID is going to have more transformative effects because it's going to touch people's earlier mm-hmm. part of the life cycle, and it's going to increase the human capital more than curing other diseases that attacks adulthood, for example.
It's rare to find something that's good news and then to find out when the economic analysis is done that it's even better news. Minky, thank you very much for talking about it.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called How Will a New Malaria Vaccine Shape Africa's Economic Future? A Macroeconomic Analysis. And the author is, of course, Minky Kim. You've just heard from him.
You have been listening to Conversations on Transformation, recorded live at the STEG Annual Conference Week 2024 at NYU Abu Dhabi. STEG stands for Structural Transformation and Economic Growth, and you can find out more about it at steg.cepr.org.